I thought we would sneak in, if you will, a different topic, which I don't think we've ever spoken about at all in this context, and that is our relationship with our fellow Jews. But specifically, I'm speaking about a topic which in certain ways is completely or largely out of sight, out of mind, if you live in a place like Ramat Beit Shemesh. But maybe that's specifically why we need to study and review some of these ideas. And that is our relationship with our brothers and sisters who are very far from Torah and Yiddishkeit. I am aware that in a neighborhood like Ramat Beit Shemesh, we are very far from Torah and Yiddishkeit. We're the people that need kiruv in the eyes of many of our neighbors. Okay, but that's not our topic right now, how we relate to the people who are, quote, firmer than us. That's a different nisayon, maybe for them and for us. But there's a whole other part. You could lose sight of it. I know we all really know this, but again, out of sight, out of mind. It's just human nature, which is that, you know, what we are fortunate enough and all the blessings we have to live in such a robust, firm community like Ramat Beit Shemesh with all of its shades and hues, we can be, you know, almost excused if we would forget the fact that this is a minuscule percentage of the Jewish people. And that even in Israel, it's a significant majority, and certainly around the world, it is a super painful majority of Jews who are very, very far from anything remotely close to Torah and mitzvos and to understanding what we believe is authentic Yiddishkeit. And this, you know, presents all sorts of challenges on every possible level. And I think that it's important, again, and as you all know, there is significant efforts across the spectrum of the community to try to help facilitate, to work with, to bring closer, to create good relationships. There's the macro level. I also assume, even in a place like our community, and I'm sure even in this room, a significant number of people have relatives who might fall into that category. There are people in this room, and there are certainly people in Ramat Beit Shemesh who themselves grew up unobservant in Cape Cod. So as much as in our day-to-day life you walk down the street in Ramat Beit Shemesh, you're not necessarily confronted with it, but if we have a little bit of a broader perspective in our own families and certainly in the broader Jewish community, we are certainly quite aware that a large percentage, again, a supermajority, to our great chagrin and shame and pain of our fellow Jews, are very, very far from classical, traditional Torah and mitzvos. Now, I think it's important to emphasize, and this might come up later in this year as well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're barren of values, that they're not good people, and it's important that we realize that. I mean, there are bad people who are not observant, and frankly, there are bad people who are observant, which is even a bigger problem to some extent. But on the whole, just because a person didn't grow up, you know, learning Shema Yisrael, or didn't grow up, maybe didn't even have a bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah, doesn't know how to read a piece of Gemara, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have bad values. I don't just mean in the generic interpersonal way. They could be a nice person, they're honest. I mean, they may even have deeply held Jewish values, many of which that we would actually respect and agree with. Life is complex, and there are all sorts of people who are various places on the spectrum, and people get their values from all sorts of different places. I happen to have, you know, had a, maybe perhaps a certain benefit of my relatively unique background. Again, it's all relative, but unlike many people who grew up in more, as I say, people who were born religious and raised religious, in many cases are born into these more robust communities. You know, I didn't come from New York or Golders Green or Hendon or anything like that. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, where, you know, my elementary school class, we graduated with 7 kids. That's boys and girls, and they weren't all Shomer Shabbos. That's my class when I was growing up. And when I went to day camp, until I was old enough to go away to sleepaway camp, my day camp, which was at the JCC, you know, I was one of 2 people who wore a yarmulke, which is why I didn't want to wear a yarmulke, because what normal boy would want to? And therefore, I always wore a baseball hat, because my parents said I had to have my head covered. And there are the one other firm person from that period of my life, who I don't see with any regularity at all, but if I would see him today, I can bet you anything that he would still call me the nickname I had from those summers because of that baseball hat. Because the team of the hat I would still wear, I got a certain nickname in the camp. And literally 30 and 40 years later, if I would see that guy, he'd still call me that. So you never know. Childhood bonds are funny and are elastic and are strong. You see an old friend, that brings back certain memories. But both of us had this unique experience of, you know, going to camp with no one who was, you know, no one who was from. We couldn't share food with other people. All those kind of challenges sensitize you. My parents, you know, were very involved, you know, not only in the Orthodox community, but also in the Federation world, in the broader community. And in many cases, they were good exemplars of a lot of what I want to talk about. They were the token or the symbolic Orthodox family. And it put a lot of pressure, but in a good way, I think, on our family. And it was something that we were able to aspire to. Now, there are all sorts of downsides of growing up in a community like that, all sorts of temptations, all sorts of challenges, which you wouldn't have had. You know, and I didn't grow up with kosher restaurants, I didn't grow up with Yeshiva League basketball, I didn't grow up with all the benefits if I'd, you know, grown up in New York or some other similar, very vibrant community. So each one has its challenges, but I wanted to speak about wherever we find ourselves, and even if, you know, we're living currently in our community, but wherever we find ourselves, we have to have a broader perspective. Perhaps this is one of the silver linings of the war. We're more in touch with, I hope they're more in touch with us, but certainly we, hopefully we've been more in touch with the broader community. And I think that we should acquaint ourselves with some of the values and some of the halachos that are hopefully supposed to guide us in that relationship, because the one thing is for sure, apathy should not be an option, certainly not a legitimate one. Halachically, Jewish values, Jewish halacha, we are absolutely obligated to care and to have a relationship as best as possible and productively as possible and meaningfully as possible with all Jews, including or even especially those who are further away from observance. So with that lengthy background and introduction, I thought perhaps a two-part series on this broader topic of interacting with Jews who are not fortunate enough to have our connection to Torah and Yiddishkeit. And I thought we would divide it up into two parts. Today's shir will be an overview, a kind of an introduction to all the various, not all actually, but most of the central and pillar significant Torah values and specifically in mitzvos, which should obligate us to find ways to meaningfully interact with Jews who are non-observant. And then, Bezrat Hashem, next week we'll try to discuss a very specific halachic topic, which I don't think we ever discussed here, so therefore I think it would be very interesting and relevant, and that would be the question of inviting non-Shomer Shabbos people to the house for a Shabbos or a Yom Tov meal. Are you allowed to invite a co-worker or a relative, in some cases it can be parents, siblings, cousins, aunts and uncles, to the house for a Shabbos meal, for a Pesach Seder, if you know that they're going to drive? It is a very, very common question. There's almost no family that I can think of that this wouldn't be a relevant question. And sometimes people either do things in both opposite directions without thinking or without really knowing the sources. And it's actually a very fascinating and complicated question. And that'll, please God, be part two next week. And then we'll get into the pre-Pesach stuff after that. Okay, without further ado, let's see. I divided today's shiur into two. Three, four, five, six or seven different broad arrays of mitzvos or values, which I think should point us to the direction of not just living in our bubble in Ramat Beit Shemesh, but feeling a greater responsibility to a population who at the moment may not be our actual physical neighbors, but you don't have to go far, even in the city of Beit Shemesh and certainly beyond the cities of Beit Shemesh, to realize that there are many, many Jews who are different than us, but they really, really are people that we have to be connected to. So the first, I think, important value which should push against, you know, this natural apathy that we would have, or just this nature of, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and, you know, birds of a feather flock together, people are more comfortable naturally being with people who are like them, and yet, there are many, many mitzvos that would push against that. And the first and most important one I wanted to mention, I think, is the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. Now this, I think, will be very compelling when we explain it, but when we think about it at first, perhaps this is not obvious at all, right? The mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, to love Hashem, you would think would mean that I have to have a relationship with Hashem, I have to love Hashem. Now you could ask, parentheses, Rabbi Gottlieb, what does that mean? How do I love God? I know how to love a child, I know how to love a spouse. What does that mean to love God? Okay, that's a good question, but that's the broad, that could be its own shir. Maybe we can give a shir on that a few years ago, I don't remember. But that certainly is worthy of its own shir. And there are many answers to that question. But one of the answers to the question directly relates to our topic. Take a look at source number one. This is the Medrash from Chazal. Yeah, very powerful right off the bat. V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, says the Medrash, source number one. You have to love Hashem. Vehu al habrios. Part of what it means to love Hashem is to make Him beloved to other people. How do we know this? Ka'avram avicha. As Avram, our forefather, Kinyan Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Efsa nefesh esher asu v'charan, malamashay Avram avinu megayra machnisam tachas kanfei shechiyam. We know the same thing about Sarah. Right? The first great kiruv workers were Avram and Sarah. They preached monotheism and tried to, you know, elevate a pagan world. So says the Sifrei, and this is actually also in a Gemara and Masechta Yuma and other sources, one of the ways we show our love of Hashem is by caring enough about Him, by loving Him enough, that we want other people to love Him. The Rambam repeats this in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in source number 2, or echoes this in the Sefer HaMitzvos, source number 2. The Rambam says, this mitzvah includes many things, but includes koleles gamkein, shenidrosh v'nikra ha'anashim kulam, lavodaso yis'alo l'hamin ba. We should try to do our best to make sure everyone else knows about Hashem, that everyone else loves Hashem, that everyone else wants to worship Him as well. If you think about this, it's totally compelling from human relationships. When you love somebody, when you like somebody, there is something in our hardwiring as human beings that we really want other people to have that opinion too. It's even about silly things like music or food or a vacation or something, right? If we like something, like it almost bothers. How could someone else not like it? But even before you get to them not liking it, this is an instinct. You want to go to your best friend. You want to go to your spouse. Oh my gosh, you got to taste this. This is amazing. You got to hear this, you know, this new singer, this new song. It's great. While achas kama vakama, if you have a friend, if you have a relative, someone who you really love and think is great, it's important for you that other people want to feel that way. You know, the easiest example I remember from my childhood was, you know, if you were, you know, if you would go to camp, and you had, you know, your camp friends, and then the next year, someone from your neighborhood, a school friend or a neighborhood friend, you know, came to that camp but didn't know anyone else. It wasn't just that if you're a nice person, you help them make friends. That is true. But it's more than that. You know that he or she is this, you know, great person. Oh my gosh, they're so fun, they're so cool, they're so funny. You know, after all, in school and in the neighborhood and in shul, we get along. So you want the new friends to, and vice versa. It's a human instinct. I think it was Rav Aryeh Kaplan, I mean, maybe someone said it before him, but I think I once saw many years ago from Rav Aryeh Kaplan, he explained, and this I think I have quoted here before, that the Pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right, which we assume to be the most important, the most famous, you know, declaration of faith, you know, in Jewish history, which is why, you know, who can even imagine how many millions of Jews over the centuries have died with those words on their lips. And yet, as Rav Aryeh Kaplan, again, maybe others pointed out before him, but I remember seeing it in one of his books, pointed out, it's a six-word declaration. Actually, only four words are theological. Only four words are religious. Right? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Right? Hashem, our God, God is one. But what is Shema Yisrael? That's not a theological statement. It's just saying, hey, everybody! So why is that part of it? Really, there should be a colon. And then the quote, the actual statement of faith is Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So why is it the Shema? And the answer, says Rabbi Kaplan, is exactly this point. Because if you truly believe in Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, you wouldn't keep it to yourself. You want Shema Yisrael, you want other people to know the truth too. And that's exactly what this Medrash and what the Rambam is saying in sources number 1 and 2. Now the amazing thing is, amazingly, and this is many years ago, I first saw this source in number 3, Often, the litmus test and the rubber hits the road when the question is, what are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to sacrifice to make sure that other people would love Hashem? Now, I'm not going to discuss today, you know, you have to spend money for Kiruv and other things like that. That would be a very interesting question. But I want to ask a more internal, subtle question. What about your own Yiddishkeit? Just to take a very simple example, which I won't answer in a simplistic way, but just so you understand what I mean. If you had an opportunity to go to a shir, or to do something else that would be spiritually enriching for you, or you could give that up, but perhaps help some other Jew get even a teeny bit closer to Hashem, get a little bit teeny closer, what would be the right thing to do? Are you even obligated to give up your own growth your own relationship with Hashem. So in one of the more remarkable sources on this topic that I have found, and I remember exactly, I was in Baltimore and I was giving a lunch and learn at a law firm, and I remember in preparation for that shiur all those years ago, I found this source, source number 3. And this is the Chasam Sofer. Now, if you know anything about Jewish history, you know that not only was Chasam Sofer one of the greatest gedolim of his day, he was also, in certain ways, quite the extremist, if you will, we call him now, a kanoi. He was leading the battle against reform. He wasn't a modernist. He wasn't an accommodationist. He wasn't a makil. He felt very strong that orthodoxy is orthodoxy, and we have to hold the line against these aberration movements. So he wasn't some, you know, wishy-washy liberal by any stretch. And yet, the Chasam Sofer, even with the fire in one hand, had a tremendous Avas Yisrael on the other hand, and he felt very, very strongly that we have to do whatever we can to be makarev people who are unfortunately distant. And he makes this point remarkably in source number 3. He points out, and we may know this, but he points it out, for those who don't, that the Tanakh itself, and certainly Chazal, extol Avram Avinu. We even saw it alluded to a moment ago. But not just in general terms, but specifically refer to Avraham. Hashem refers to Avram as Ohavi. Hashem, Avram is the one who loved me. Avram is given this appellation as the one who loved Hashem. So wonders the Chasam Sofer, what did Avraham do that was so significant that made him to be the one who truly loved Hashem? More than anybody else, he's the one biblical character who gets this compliment. So says the Chasam Sofer, source number 3, amazingly, Al Shalime Das Es Ha'am V'Kirvam Levodoso V'Hisha Amdilo Yoser Mikol Maisei Atov V'Zchus HaNefesh Shehayilo L'Atzmo. The single greatest zechus that Avram had was not that he discovered God according to this opinion at 3 or at this opinion at 40. He's in a pagan world. His dad is an idolater. And on his own, he discovers God. Amazing. He did all sorts of great things in his life. But the single greatest thing, says Chasam Sofer, that Avram did was he tried to, you'll forgive the expression, share the gospel. He tried to spread the belief in an ethical monotheism. And that is the reason, says the Chasam Sofer, that he had this moniker. He became the only one who loved Hashem. Again, that's very much in line with what we're saying. That if you love Hashem, just like if you love the person, you want other people to know about that person. You love the song, Lahavdil, you want other people to know about that song. Well, he loved Hashem so much, he was bursting forth and he wanted to tell everybody. Okay, that's just consistent with what we're seeing until now, added to Avraham. But then he goes one step further. He says something incredible. Says the Chasam Sofer, if you think about it, could be that Avram was not the greatest person of his generation or those early periods of history. Don't look at me that way. Chasam Sofer said it, not me. He says, could be that people like Shame, Ve'ever, were greater than him. It's not true, as sometimes the kids are taught, that Avram was the first person to discover God. It's not true. The Torah itself describes people in other generations who also walked with God. Right? It was complicated. There were very few. And yet, even Noah, let alone Shame and Eber and other people, they're barely mentioned in the Chumash. Whereas Avram's the great hero. So says the Chasam Sofer, it's not necessarily that Avram was greater than them. On the contrary, he says, Ki tov l'adam l'ma'et pahashlamas nafsho l'man rabos klod Hashem. Says the Chasam Sofer something astounding. If Avram wanted to truly be the best he could be, to get the closest he could to Hashem, to perfect himself the most, what would Avram have done? He would have isolated himself as much as possible, just focused on his own growth, focused on his own relationship with Hashem, gone off to some mountain and meditated. Right? There wasn't as much urban sprawl as there is now. He could have found some good real estate for a good price. And then he could have been who knows how great. More or less, that's what other people did. The rare people who were spiritual before him did that. But Avram didn't do that. Avram was a man of the people. Avram spent almost all his time, once he found Hashem, sharing that. And says the Chasam Sofer, in Echanami, he paid a price. I'll put it in modern terms, anachronistically. How many times did Avram finish Shas? How many times did he go through the Daf Yomi? The answer could be, I don't know, maybe he didn't at all. Maybe he did very few, but certainly less than he would have. Don't think you could have it all. Right? If I could, you know, borrow a parallel example, right? This was one of the lies of the early feminist movement, right? You can have it all. It's not true. Now, what? Now that you realize you can't have it all, which to prioritize is a different discussion. But at least be honest. You can't have it all. Life's about hard choices. See, he says the Chasam Sofer the same thing. You can't just do everything that's best for you and best for other people. Sometimes you have to pick. Now again, I'm not giving a one-size-fits-all answer. But at least as a matter of principle, from the perspective of the value, says the Chasam Sofer, if you truly love Hashem, you're not doing what's best for you. You're doing what's best for Him. And what's best for Hashem? That you should learn more, or that untold numbers of other Jews should get even a little bit closer, even though Hashem exists? Says the Chasam Sofer, Avraham was Oavi because he prioritized other people's growth in connection with Hashem even over his own. That's the greatest way to show that you love Hashem. And we have to be willing to do that, says the Chasam Sofer. Just last week, when I flew to America for a few days, so I went Thursday, literally I landed, I spoke to the top kollel at Yeshiva University. That was my first trip. Stop. It was a guest speaking gig to the kollel guys, who are, you know, in their late 20s, and they're learning seriously at a high level. And I was talking to them about all sorts of what their career will be eventually. And who knows? I don't know what their plans are. I don't even know them, most of them, personally. But I mentioned, without even knowing I was going to talk about this year, but I just mentioned, when you figure out what to do, you shouldn't be thinking about what's the best way for me to learn the most. And therefore, what job will allow that? It's not about you. It's about Hashem. I said, you are learning a lot, and you're very serious in kollel for many years, because you think, and I think you're right, that Hashem wants you to become a Talmid Chacham. But that always has to be the question. What does Hashem want? Not what do I want. What's best for Hashem? Not what's best for me. It could be that it's best for you to stay Rosh Hashiva and just teach a small number of very good kids. Or it could mean that the best thing for you is to go off to who knows where and be a shul rabbi in a community where maybe you'll have much less time to learn, you won't have to give such high level shiurim, but maybe that's what's best for, but maybe that's what Hashem wants. It's not about you. So this is exactly what Avram represents, and this is this ideal. Now, I want to add one more point before we move on to the next value or mitzvah I want to discuss, but that is something I just saw last night. So the Chasam Sofer, source number 3, I saw 20 years ago. But Baruch Hashem, Torah is rich, and we never stop learning. So last night, I found something new. Source number 4, this is the Sefer Tam Vadas. This is the 3-volume set on Chumash by Rav Moshe Sternbach. He should live and be well, 90 plus years old, late 90s, I think, at this point, living in Harnof, which means, I guess, maybe he could still have a baby. I don't know. In case you're wondering, he was the rabbi, apparently, who gave the bracha to the 88-year-old rabbi who had the baby. So if you saw that video the day after, not the bris, so the 88-year-old rabbi, Rabbi Krishulevsky, he went, literally the day after he had a baby, he went to this Rabbi Sternbach to thank him, because apparently last year he gave him a bracha that he should have a child. Anyway, I add all that without any commentary. But Rav Sternbach, who's a great, great tzaddik and a big Talmid Chacham and a big genius, so source number 4, he makes a similar point in a very, very powerful way. He points out, he says he heard something in the name of the Chavetz Chaim. Right, the pasuk says, we say in Shema every day about loving Hashem. How do we have to love Hashem? Da, 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 da. And also, B'chol Me'odecha. Now, what does B'chol Me'odecha mean? You say it every day. We have to know what it means. So the simple pshat is B'chol Me'odecha means with all your money. In theory, you have, you know, tuition can be expensive. Kosher is expensive. Pesach is expensive. B'chol Me'odecha. You have to even love Hashem through your money. But said the Chavetz Chaim in a play on words, with all of your ma'od. B'chol Me'odecha, ha'kavana l'kol inyan shechaviv al ha'adam. Ad ma'od. Anything that you really love, anything that's your ma'od, that you love very, very, very much. Now, the chief thing that most people love is money. But it's not only about money. It's anything that's your ma'od, anything that's important to you, you have to be willing to give up for Hashem. And said the Chavetz Chaim, therefore, va'im kein, af'im alav lahakriv ma'alosav haruchaniyut avur avas Hashem yizbarachai v'ulasos kein. Even if what you have to give up is your own Yiddishkeit, if you will. Again, there's limits. I'm not giving like practical halacha psak now. doesn't mean you can do an aveira necessarily to help someone else. But again, if it's about you learning more, you getting bigger, you doing more, or helping other people, and you are a very passionate, very firm person, sincerely, you very much, it's your ma'od. What's important to you is, yeah, I want to go to another shir, I want to learn more, I want to daven better. But are you willing to give that up if it's better for Hashem to help someone else? That's the... Is it... Are you loving yourself? Or are you loving... You know, there's an old kind of a bon mot, I don't even know, or a cutesy joke. I think they say it in the name of some of the Bali Musar, but it could be there was something that was like stolen from non-Jewish sources. I don't know. But it's a cute little thing. You ask a person, you know, what do you... I love fish. Really, do you kill everything you love? Then, so you don't love fish. You love yourself. And you enjoy the taste of fish. You don't love fish at all. You love yourself. Okay? So, this is the same point that Rav Sternbach is making, that the Chasam Sofer made, that the Chavetz Chaim is making. When you say, I go to Shiurim and I learn and I'm Tzanu and I do all these things because I love Hashem. Really? Or is it that you love yourself and it makes you feel good? How do I know the difference? Would you be willing to give up some of it to help someone else get a little bit of it? If it's about Hashem, you'd even be willing to have less so that someone else had more. If it's about you, probably not. So this is a very, very important point. When we want to look at ourselves in the mirror, hopefully we all want to be able to say at the end of 120 that we did love Hashem. Well, a huge part of that we see already from the Gemara, Chazal, the Rambam, Chasam Sofer, Chavetz Chaim. Right? You can't get a more impressive line of people than that. Part of loving Hashem is making sure that as much as possible, not everyone has the ability, not everyone's going to be the next Amar Avinu. I understand that. Lahavdil, Jimmy Graham. Right? We're not all preachers. Everyone has to find their niche and their way. And it can sometimes just be being a good role model. I don't think I mentioned before, you know, when I'm growing up in Cincinnati, right? My parents weren't preachers, you know, in this regard. But people in the non-firm world knew to be an Orthodox Jew means to be an honest person, to be an ethical person. How do I know? Because I know Ronnie and Sarah Gottlieb. That's what they are. It was very important that my parents were very conscious of it. We had somebody who lived on our block who used to cut our grass. It's a teenager. I'm not sure if he became fully Shomer Shabbos, but he definitely became much closer. He might even become fully Shomer Shabbos. Years later, I met him. And he told me it started because of the way my father treated him when he cut our grass. It's an unbelievable thing. Most people, we've all probably had good experiences like that. I'm not saying my parents are unique. My parents are wonderful, but they're not unique. They're not the only good people in the world. But most of us, if we're lucky at 120, we'd find out about that. I got lucky that I met this guy years later. He goes, "You're Rabbi Gottlieb? Oh my gosh, are you from Loraloak?" This is even before we moved. In eighth grade, we moved to another house. But this is from even before that. When I was a little kid, we had a certain house. We had a ranch right on the corner, a street called Loraloak. And it was a cul-de-sac. And at the end of the block was a different family. A Jewish family, but not religious at all. And their teenage son used to cut my parents' grass. I don't even know what my father did or didn't do or how he said. But somehow the way he spoke to him and the way he saw my father, he said, I want to be more religious. So this is part of what it means to... It doesn't have to be that we're always leading Kiruv seminars. But if we interact with people, we have opportunities, we're menschlich, that's part of showing how much we love Hashem. We want to make other people get even that much closer. Okay. Now, on the other side, I won't say the other side of it, but another dimension completely is another halacha, which is source number 5. And this is a very tricky one. Certain people love this one, and if you love this one too much, then you might not do it well. And that is the mitzvah of rebuke. Hocheach tochiach es amisecha. There's actually two different mitzvahs in many ways. The Rambam says in source number 5, Shetzivanu lehochiach achotei, omishi yirtze lachto limnoa somimenu b'mamar v'tochacha. If you see someone sinning, or even better, if it's before they sin, but they're about to sin, a person is supposed to say something, you try to stop them. So the Rambam says it's a positive command to do so. In source number 6, Rabbeinu Yonah points out that the second half of the pasuk doesn't just say hochech tochiach es amisecha, you shall surely rebuke, right, your fellow Jew, but it also says lo sisa alav chet, you shall not carry, so to speak, you know, the other person's iniquity, you know, iniquity burden, so to speak, you shouldn't carry it, if you will. Which the Rabbeinu Yonah, source number 6, understands is a negative commandment, a lo tasa. His harnu was a shalo nisa chet pachet chaveirenu b'himano mi hochech osam. That is to say, according to Sefer, Shari Tshuva, Rabbi Yonah, if you don't rebuke someone and you could have, you violated a lotase, and in some sense, it's as if you did the mitzvah. You're carrying that mitzvah with that person. That sin with the person. So whether it's a positive command of the Rambam, a negative command of Rabbeinu Yonah, there is a command. There is not just a value, but it's an actual mitzvah, an obligation, and maybe even a negative prohibition. If we know that someone is about to sin or is sinning and we could do something to stop them, then we're obligated to say something. And as the Rambam points out, why is this important to tell us this? Because most of us have a live and let live perspective. That's certainly true in our modern and postmodern world. But it was even true in the Rambam's day. If you go back to source number 5, at the end of the source, he says, "Ein roi lo shiyomar echad mimenu, ani lo echta v'im echta zu lasimali." A person shouldn't say, "I'm not going to sin." And if someone else sins, what's up my business? What do I care? Zehefecha Torah, says the Rambam. It's the opposite of a Jewish perspective. Of course we have to care. We care about our fellow Jew. And if we care about him or her, and we can help stop them from sinning, we are obligated to do so. Now, I added one important caveat. It has to have the possibility of being effective. The Gemara says if you're going to be not going to be effective, or in many cases, and this is true nowadays often, counterproductive, then discretion is the better part of valor. You shouldn't open up your mouth. But more often than we might realize, we could positively impact someone with a smart, delicate, appropriate word or suggestion. And the reason that most of us don't say a word, even when we do see things, is not just because we've done such a cheshbon in our mind, you know, if I would say something, it's not going to go well. Let's be honest. The reason that most of us don't say anything is it's uncomfortable. Because we don't want to. I don't want to be the frummy. I don't want to be that guy, that girl. I don't want to be that person. I understand it's not so easy. I'm not saying it would be comfortable for me either. But it's a mitzvah. Now, of course, it's also important to realize, as the Rambam says in source number 7, how you say things is critical. And this is where I think, you know, unfortunately so many people do make mistakes. That they do it in a way that is, you know, as I say, counterproductive. But the Rambam points out explicitly, look at source number 7, Yedaber lo benachas ubeloshon racha v'yodiyo she'enu omer lo ela l'tovaso l'aviyo l'chaylam abav. Very, very important. Is number one is the words or the language or the even just the sound of your voice. It has to be coming from a soft, loving, caring place. Shabbos! Not what the Rambam had in mind. I'm not even discussing throwing things, okay? Right? This is literally the opposite of what the Rambam was describing. So how you say it is part of the mitzvah. Because you didn't have to be the Rambam to realize that if you do it screaming, it is not so likely going to work. And if I was a betting man, I'd more likely bet on it having the opposite impact. But it's not only the tone or the word choice. Says the Rambam, and this is key. Source number 7. It's also the attitude, the place inside of you from which it's coming. Now, I'm going to make two connected points. I believe they're both in the Rambam, but I want to explicate it in a way that the Rambam didn't. Which is, it's not just because, as the Rambam seems to say on the surface, it is, we want the person to hear that the reason you're saying something is not because you're a nosy buddy, not because you're patronizing, not because you're judgmental, because you really love them and you think this is better for them. But the first point, which I think Rambam is assuming, which is the most critical, is that really has to be how you feel. If that's how you truly feel, it will hopefully then come out in the way you speak. It cannot be, if I want to borrow an expression, I didn't put it on the sheet, but Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky makes this point in his commentary to the Torah. The purpose of this mitzvah, and he uses this Rambam as a proof, is we're not here to be God's policemen. I love that phrase because I think it describes so many people, unfortunately, over the years that I know. That they think they were put on this earth to be God's policeman. Says the Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yosef Rambam, that is not what Hochech Tochich is about. We're not there to point out how everyone is not tzniyus, everyone's not davening. This is not our role. God has enough ways. He sees. He's got a camera. He didn't need the policeman. He's got the traffic cam. He sees. The reason that we're obligated to try to do something or say something is because we truly believe that it's better for them. Not because God needs it, but because we care about the person and they're hurting themselves. They don't realize it. If you saw somebody, you let's say you're at a restaurant and you overheard someone saying to her husband, you know, or you overheard, you could tell this person had a nut allergy. And then you heard that they were about to order, they were ordering a certain dish, or she was about to eat something. And you knew they had nuts in it. Wouldn't you say something? You might even scream. You might even dive at the person. Now, are you doing it because you don't like the person? Would they bruise it? No, the answer is no, you care. And you want to help them. So, again, without trying to be melodramatic, but what this mitzvah is telling us is you have to realize that if you see someone doing something wrong, that's basically like them having spiritual poison. So not saying anything does not show how sophisticated you are, how modern you are, how tolerant you are. It means that you don't care that the person is killing themselves. I know we don't think about it that way, I'm aware. But maybe we should. We have to care. If you see somebody doing something wrong, again, I want to bring this down because our topic is about non-religious and the broader Jewish community. But if I could bring it down, you know, to complete, much more even immediately relevant, this is why we, not that you needed me to tell you this, but if I just put in halachic values and language around this, this is why we care when our children don't do the right thing. What do you mean? Again, once you have kids old enough, they will, trust me, they will be thinking, why do you care if I do X or Y? It's my relationship with Hashem. It's my mitzvah. And just in case anyone's wondering, the Gottliebs have heard that from their own children too. We're not immune. Baruch Hashem, all my kids are wonderful. We're proud of all of them. But at various points, and about certain specific things, that each one has the thing that's hard for him or her. So this Rambam is incredibly important for parents too. Not just because you work in Tel Aviv, or you're in Miluim, and you know somebody, or you're in a federation. It's all, that is true, but it's also true even for our own children. Of course we care. Again, I don't need to tell a parent why they should care. The children, you know, all you can do is hope one day the children will become parents and then they'll understand why you care. And then they tell you, but yeah, but my Israeli friends, their parents don't make them do X or Y. I say, no, but I'm American. I plead guilty. I'm American. Apparently, I'm learning this from my children. Apparently, American parents are more hands-on. So I am told. So I am told. Okay? Okay, I said when you become a parent, you will choose how hands-on or not hands-on. And I want to point out, I mean this sincerely. I'm not saying that the hands-on, sometimes you know, you're so hands-on, you're counterproductive. That's part of the unbelievably complicated challenge that no one got a rule book for, no one got trained for, no one got licensed for how to be a good parent. What's too much, what's too little? Who knows? No one knows the answer to that question. We all do our best. But on a value level, of course we care. And yet this Rambam has to be as relevant to us as parents too. You know, if you're just angry at the child that they didn't go to Minyan, that they didn't do this, that the skirt's too short, or whatever the reasons parents get angry at kids. So what are you communicating to your child? Are you angry at them because they disappointed you, because they're going to make you look bad in the community? Trust me, the kids can snuff that out. That's the exact opposite of what the Rambam is saying. No, you have to, both in your language, your tone, your body language, and everything, what has to be communicated is, I'm doing this because I care about you, I love you, and I know that this is better for you. I wish you knew. I'm trying to help you explain, but even if you don't, you know that I love you. And this is what... Now, if that's hard to do to our children, it certainly could be hard to do to a stranger. Again, maybe, I don't know, in certain ways, the stranger might be easier. And a teenager, you know, as I say, often the parents, I mentioned just recently to someone a certain story with one of my children from the army who Nebuch has, among other friends who were killed, one of his best friends was killed Hanukkah time. And when he went, he actually was asked by the family to speak at the Shloshim. So in some ridiculous way, I actually asked him if he wanted me to go with him. It was one of the dumber things I've ever done.
Why?
Because, look, the last thing he wanted was his father with him. I have a good relationship. It was just, I don't mean this was an example of why I didn't mess up, I'm saying. I didn't do plenty of those mess ups too as a parent. But so, of course, he wanted a friend. I don't know if he wanted anybody, but a friend went with him, and it was good that someone, I knew someone had to go with him. But, you know, the friend told me afterwards, he spoke for 10 minutes, he spoke amazing, and he literally, when he got up to speak, he started crying, and he didn't stop crying until he stopped speaking. So I didn't want him to be alone. But I was a 21-year-old in the army to a friend, an Israeli friend who doesn't, I don't know, I never met the boy, Nebuch, who passed away. It was a friend from yeshiva. He wants to bring his father with him? Once I say it, I realize how silly it sounded. Okay, whatever. From the perspective of a 21-year-old, it was a very silly thing to suggest. Apparently. So, Okay, but the point is we have to figure out language. So sometimes with your children it's harder, sometimes it would be with a coworker or a stranger, it might be easier or harder, who knows? But either way, from a values perspective, we have to realize that we actually do have to care. The Rambam said, to someone who just says, I'll do my thing, I do the right thing, and someone else sins, what do I care? Said the Rambam is a hefech haTorah. How to do it, when to do it, what words to use. So again, it has to be coming from love, they have to realize that, and it has to be in a positive way. But sometimes you have to do your best, and sometimes maybe saying something will be counterproductive and you shouldn't say something. There's all sorts of ways you can communicate this, but you should be aware that we have this mitzvah called Docheach Tochiach, which really means we have to care about other people, we can't care about ourselves. And I want to now give a few other examples of mitzvahs, we'll move a little quicker now, which also various mefarshim view in that way. So for example, you might think surprisingly, in source number 8 and 9, there are those who say that the mitzvah in the Torah of returning lost objects applies as well. Right? Not you left your wallet, you left your phone at a restaurant, that's a mitzvah. Right? We don't say finders keepers, losers weepers. Right? That's the exact opposite of a Jewish perspective. If you find something, there's a mitzvah from the Torah to try to return it to the rightful owner. However, the Gemara says in source number 8, it's not just you have to return someone's wallet or someone's phone, even avedas gufo. If someone is in physical danger, if you would see someone, God forbid, you know, I used an analogy before, an example of an allergy. Now, if you could call a doctor, or you had an EpiPen, and you would say, I don't want to give that to that person, I'll keep it for myself. So you'd be violating a number of mitzvahs, we'll get to the second one in a minute. But one thing is, there's a mitzvah to help give someone back their life. Avedas gufo. If I have to give back their wallet, says the Gemara, Allah has come of a comment, if I can, I have to give them back their life. Well, if that's true, says the Gemara, source number 8, says the Shlok Kodesh, source number 9, if I have to help give back their body, you know what's even more important than that? If they lost their soul. If they're wandering and they got lost on the Yiddishkeit road. Kol Shekain, says number 9, Avedas Nafsho. If you could help them find their missing soul, Terech Ato La'amor Al-Mishmeres Letroach Legea Eich Achicha Yashuv B'tshuva. Again, you can't always do it. I'm aware. I'm not talking about how to do this practically. Are you the right person? Is this the right way? What does this mean? Do I invite the coworker over for a Shabbos meal, for a Pesach Seder? Do I just stop talk about, you know, Yiddishkeit when we have lunch together? Do I figure out ways to sprinkle in thing? That you have to be more of a chacham. That every case is different. That we're not going to obviously going to solve that. Give you a roadmap for that in one shir now. But as a matter of principle, another mitzvah, a third mitzvah that might be relevant to our discussion is Hashavas Aveda. And in a very similar way, almost identical, but similar way, but it's a different mitzvah, and we're adding up points here. Sources number 10 and 11, both the Minchas Tinacha, source number 10, and again the Shlok Kadosh, source number 11, say that there's another mitzvah which is relevant here, very similar, but maybe even stronger, which is Lo Tamod Al Damriyacha. The Pasuk says, do not stand idly by while the blood of your friend or your neighbor is flowing. That is to say, if you see someone drowning, says the Gemara, you see someone who's in danger, and you could save them, then you have an obligation to be involved. Now, I often point out, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, if you're on the plane, you know, and all of a sudden you hear those dreaded words over the intercom, is there a doctor on board? Right? Now is not the time to say, my mom always wanted me to be a doctor. Right? Wouldn't this be great if I saved him? You know, someone's got a camera phone. This will go viral on Yeshiva World News or something. You know, this is not... But if you actually are a doctor, you actually could save the person. Yeah, but I just got into a good show. I just started a good book. Oh yeah, my nap. And the lunch is the tray table's out in front of me. Forget it. That's Lo Samar Adam Reacha. You have a chance to help, you could save somebody? It's a mitzvah from the Torah. If you would do nothing, that is one of the most serious averus you could do. So that's about saving a person's body. So it says the Minchas Tinacha, source number 10. Says the Shlo again in source number 11. If you could save their neshama, you see a person throwing away their neshama. God forbid, or not throwing away. Just they're losing it. We're not blaming them even. But the point is, you could help. Again, I repeat, if you can help. If you'll make it worse, get out of the way. So you have to know if you'll be able to help or not. But for example, as we'll just read the line in source number 10, the Menchas Chinuch, Im Yochel Lahatzel Min Havera, Hu Averas Navsho Vagufo Rachman Alatzlan, Bavare Chayev Lachziro Lemutov U Lahatzilo. Of course you'd have to try to help. That's Lo Samar Al Dam Riacha. If you have to worry about someone's body, of course you have to all the more so worry about their neshama. So again, very similar to Hashavas Aveda, but perhaps even a little bit more acute. And in the third vein, also in the same similar way, the Chavetz Chaim, source number 12, says this is also a mitzvah of tzedakah. Tzedakah isn't just about giving physical, material. You can give someone spiritual charity. It's also important. Says the Chavetz Chaim, look at source number 12. This is very important. Tzarcha adam lit'orer b'nafsho al anashim ke'elu l'rachem aleim. We have to really think about all these people who Nebuch don't know any better, and they're very far from Yiddishkeit. Or maybe they do know better, it's even more painful. We should care about them. Kamosh im hayaroa ish ani arum, she'en lo lovish. If you saw somebody who had no clothes, wouldn't you do anything to help them? Ki b'ma yichasen nafsho. Sham ba'olam ha'elyon achrei shu arum b'torah mitzvah. Well, just like you would do anything you could, if you saw Nebuchadnezzar walking down the street naked, of course you'd give them clothing, you'd feel so bad for them. Well, this person is naked from Torah mitzvos. One day they're going to go up to Shemayim and they're going to be the only one undressed. They're going to be embarrassed. So you're doing them a kindness. So just like we would help them physically, all the more so. So we have three separate mitzvos, but each of them work in the same way. Returning a lost object, tzedakah, osanam dam riyacha, and all three of these, the simple reading, the simple meaning is about material or physical things. But in all three of them, you have Mefarshim saying, yeah, but if I have to worry about someone's physical wallet, his physical life, clothing, money, so all the more so I have to care about the person's neshama. I want to add something that I alluded to earlier in the shir, but with this unit of three, it's important to repeat, which is it's incredibly important that this not come from a place of being patronizing. Right, you could read all of these sources and start looking at people, I Nebuch, you Nebuch. You may have a fancy dress on, a fancy suit on, but I know you're really naked. You think you have all this money in the bank account, I know you're impoverished. You're a loser. You're a Nebuch. And me, who am so wealthy, so choshev, so important, so knowledgeable, I am willing to give up some of my time to Nebuch help you. Right? That would be a disaster. First of all, it's terrible midos on our part, and it also won't work. Clearly. This goes back to that Rambam we saw, source number 7. It can't be from a perspective of patronizing. And no one in this room, including me, are, well, maybe a little bit, you are, professional kirov people. Okay, a little bit. I didn't use anyone's name, anyway. But the point is, I can tell you, anyone who's honest, who works in the outreach world, knows that that is one of the big nisyonos for outreach workers. You know, how much is it about Hashem, what's best for the other person, and how much is it a notch on my belt? Right? And sometimes, Rahman al-Atlan, the wrong people get attracted to these kind of careers. Right? This could be true about seminary teachers, it could be true about Yeshiva Rebbeim, where it's really one glorified ego trip, and there's a lot of control, and even in the non-extreme horror cases, which I know of some, there could just be an attitude of patronizing. Right? Now, on the other hand, that's terrible. On the other hand, isn't it true, Rabbi Gottlieb? Yes, isn't it true that aren't these sources telling us, and don't we believe, that for that, however it is that each of us came to it, we believe that we found the truth. And we want to share with people who don't know it. Isn't that what all these sources are telling us to do? So it's a very fine line. Yes, anything we would do with a coworker, with a child who's not where they should be, with a sibling, with a parent, with a whatever, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle who's not religious and you want to help them, of course it's coming from a perspective of we really, really believe that we know what's better for you. So how did you internalize that belief and therefore hopefully act on it with compassion, sensitivity, and with wisdom? But not do so from a perspective of elitism, patronizing, smugness, right? Or, you know, not like a religious politician. Right? Whoever they talk, that's not how you would want to talk. I'm not saying that's an easy thing, but we have to be on guard for that. Yes, we're coming from a perspective of a deeply held belief that what we believe is true, and that was not only good for us, but be good for them. but we can't do it in a way that makes them feel belittled, as if, oh, they're the Nebuch and I'm giving a handout, right? No one wants to accept a handout, right? To get to use the analogy of tzedakah, we do our best not to embarrass the poor person when we give him or her the money. All the more so if someone doesn't even think they're poor. Can you imagine going over to a partner in the law firm, you know, here's a $180 check in front of everybody. Were you bad enough if you gave the janitor $180 in front of everybody, you'd embarrass him. If you give the partner, I don't need the money. No, you don't realize you're really poor. No, what are you talking about? My portfolio is full enough. But I know! That's not going to go well. So if you go over to someone who's living their nice, good life, nice, secular Jew, but I know you're really poor, and I'm going to Nebuch help you, because you're a Nebuch loser. Right? That's not going to be, it's not right. It's also not effective. Don't we believe it? Yes! We believe that the king has no clothing. They don't realize it. So that's a very tricky thing, but we have to work on ourselves to be able to do that. Just want to finish by mentioning briefly two more points. One is in verses 13 and 14, very powerful. Two of our heroes of today's shiur, we come back to both of them again, the Chasam Sofer and the Chafetz Chaim. We've quoted them both a few times today. They make a point which is, you won't be surprised, maybe you'll be surprised that it took this long to mention it, but you won't be surprised that I'm mentioning it now, which is another mitzvah which is involved, is V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha. Right, if you truly love your fellow Jew, so love can mean a lot of things, but it certainly would mean caring about their neshama. Just like, as I alluded to before, we love our children, we love our grandchildren, so we want them, hopefully, to be frum, because we care about them, and we know that this would be better for them, whether they realize it or not. So that's certainly true about everybody. So says the Chasam Sofer, you know, I won't insult you by singing. But you all know the famous Yeshiva Boys Choir song, "Rehach Recha Kamocha Zakal Goro Batorah." If you don't know it, you know, check it out on Spotify. I'm not going to sing it for you. But that's like a popular song. Hey, they didn't make up the words. It's from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, the great Rabbi Akiva, that "Rehach Recha Kamocha," love your fellow Jew like yourself. This is the Klal Goro Batorah. This is like the main principle of Judaism. So says the Chasam Sofer, source number 13. This was actually new to me last night as well. Says when Rabbi Kiva said V'hatrecha kamocha, this is the principle. Chasam Sofer suggests they were specifically referring to the spiritual dimension of V'hatrecha kamocha. Not that you help the person. You're driving down the road and you see someone with a flat tire, and you stop, and you help the person. V'hatrecha kamocha. Because I think if I'd be the one on the stranded on the side of the highway, would I want someone to stop for me? So I should also do that for somebody else. That's the golden rule. So says Chasam Sofer, that's true, but that's not the Klal Gadol B'Torah Rabbi Kiva was talking about. Is if I was going into spiritual oblivion, I was about to go over the waterfall and someone could help me and pull me back, wouldn't I want that? So the fact that I have everything we've been talking about until now, that I have to try to help with someone's neshama too, because I care about them, since that's the Klal Gadol B'Torah. And the Chafetz Chaim gives a very resonant mashal, this affected me viscerally because it related to my own childhood and a little bit my own children, which is, says the Chafetz Chaim, source number 14, imagine for yourself, Hayelo ben bi'ir acheres. If you had a child who was away from home, so I thought about this because I was away from home. Since I was 13, I was away from home. I had to go to a dorm school. My children don't go, I was 600 miles away from home. My parents, my own children are just in Yerushalayim. But even my children who are just a few kilometers away, there are people in that neighborhood. People live in the neighborhood. My kids were in school in Kiryat Moshe and Yerushalayim. Again, I was in New York, 600 miles away from my parents. And then I was in Silver Spring for high school. There were people who took care of me, who took an interest in me, who took a liking in me, who invited me over for Shabbos, who cared about me. They were there for me when my parents couldn't be. Everybody has that, virtually, unless you're one of those people whose children never leave the nest. And that's also not such a healthy thing. So we all understand, v'shteitzach, if you're a halfway decent person, there's no hakaras hatov, there's no gratitude like a person should have for someone who did something good for their own children. Right? My parents are still filled 30 years later with gratitude to the people who used to help me when I was in high school when they weren't there. And me, I know somebody who we just said, you know, one of my sons is graduating high school now. So we had a big, you know, final assembly, you know, and all of a sudden all these kids who I've been hearing about, my son talking about, we met the parents. Oh, you're the one who always invites Aaron over. We were so happy to see them so we could thank them in person for the first time. So says the Chafetz Chaim, it's the same thing. Hashem is the parent. Hashem is up in Shemaim. Hashem can't necessarily help this person right now. Right? They have Bechir Chofshis. Hashem's not going to stop them from sinning. But how grateful would Hashem be if you took care of his children when he can't? That's the Haftar HaKamot. And last but not least, I just want to point out, in the last sources, that another idea, which again, you won't be surprised that I'm mentioning, you might be surprised it took this long, which is another value which we should keep in mind, is of course the idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. I did that all Jews are responsible for one another. And that's based on the Gemara in source number 15, that there is an idea of mutual responsibility. Again, we saw it before in a certain sense echoed by the Rambam, where the Rambam said, for a person to say, I'm going to do the right thing, I don't care if someone else does, it's not my business, it's the opposite of a Torah perspective. Because on the contrary, we're all responsible for each other. And many sources, very famously, the Ritva in source number 16, but he's not the only one, many sources, when they're elucidating this idea, make the point that the reason we're all responsible for each other is because we're really all one. The kulam kaguf echad. Just like, you know, the left hand cares when the right hand is in pain, because everyone's in pain, the whole body's in pain, even if it's only one finger that got broken. So of course we all care. So if there's one fellow Jew who's in pain, one fellow Jew who's lost, one fellow Jew who's unfortunately without realizing it's hurting him or herself, of course we have to care. And therefore, the Ritva says here, this is his context, verse number 16, if there's anyone else, any other Jew who you could have helped and didn't do a mitzvah, even if you did that same mitzvah, you didn't do it 100%. That's why a person can make, for example, Kiddush many times on Shabbos. To be motzi someone. A person made Kiddush in shul, then he goes home and makes Kiddush for his family. To be motzi his wife or motzi. What do you mean? I already made Kiddush. Why should I make Kiddush again? How am I even allowed to make Kiddush again? So it says Ritva because Kaisar Zebazeh. Until someone else has done the mitzvah, you didn't really finish your mitzvah because really all one. So these are most, I wouldn't say all, but most of the very, very important. I mean, we've discussed some of the most cardinal principle values. Loving Hashem, loving your fellow Jew, Lo Tamar Adam Riecha, Hashav Saveda, Kaisar Rebim Zebazeh. All of these have to go into our relationship in, you know, with our fellow Jews. And again, as I'll just end how I started, right? There are all sorts of benefits to living where we live. One of the downsides is it's out of sight, out of mind. Because if you spend your days in Ramat Beit Shemesh, you don't usually see people who this year was focused on. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't be aware of these ideas. And on the contrary, maybe we need to find ways to have positive influences in other areas of our life, even if it's not going to be in our day-to-day, depending on where we live or where we work. But these are very, very important principles, and we have to have a broader perspective. The Jewish people is broad and varied. And again, the people that we're very friendly with are the people we sit next to in shul, are the 1% of the 1%. But there's a big, wide Jewish world there that is very different than us in many ways, and unfortunately is lacking a lot that we have, we're blessed to have. And these are many different mitzvahs we should keep in mind as we hopefully, in a very sensitive, smart, and compassionate, non-patronizing way, can do each of us on our own way, whatever we can to help share the beauty of Yiddishkeit with all of them.